refreshing beer.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And so the Mariners get a big victory over the Cleveland Indians last night to start of a four-game series. And joining us from the Venue Kings hotline, Chasen Bradford, who's now part of a bullpen that's really off to a great start. Chasen, thanks for joining us. And tell us a little bit. It's like this: there seems to be good confidence right now in the bullpen.
Hey, pleasure to be here. Yeah, it's kind of hard not to have confidence when you got Juan Acacio and Eddie Diaz at the back end. But everybody else seems to be pulling on that same string, and it's really amazing to see.
I mean, when you, and of course, you came over in January on a waiver claim from the New York Mets. I mean, when you got to camp, what did you think your chances of making the team were? And then kind of take us through everything that you kind of went through. Because obviously, you've come here so far. You've got two wins. You've got 9 2/3 innings. You've got real good pitching going. What was your thoughts when you got here, and how did it all work out?
Well, I knew it was going to be a battle in camp, you know, because there's a lot of guys here that have time, and they're bringing in other guys too to fill slots. So, but I think just getting back up here and pitching the way I know how to pitch it's been the biggest confidence booster to myself. I've been lucky to get two wins out of it, and you know, my whole job is to keep this team in the game, to score runs and hopefully get the wins. And you know, if I do that, then I'm happy with it.
I guess in a lot of ways, I mean, that's how the game has kind of changed, because now everybody is more reliant on the bullpen. And now this team, of course, has 8 in the bullpen. And, you know, a lot of times, I mean, you could be asked to be out there in the 5th, 6th inning to try to do it. And, of course, that is a challenge. I mean, that wasn't really there years ago.
No. You've seen the starting dynamic change. Like if a guy goes 5 innings now, it's good, you know, and they hand it over to the bullpen. So, you know, it's just something you got to go with. And I'm comfortable with the 5th or 6th inning if they need me in that time. You know, whenever they tell me to pitch, I'm going to pitch.
Well, that was the one thing, I think. I mean, it was really noticeable in the Astros series because, I mean, there was a little bit of a playoff environment to it. And you can see it's like, okay, you know, one mistake or great success in the 5th or 6th innings can determine who's going to win some of these close games.
Yeah. And I think it's definitely a shift where they're putting more trust in the bullpen to keep that game, you know, either continue winning it or keep it close enough to possibly come back and win in the later innings.
Mentally, how do you have to prepare yourself? Because, you know, clearly if, you know, guys out there, I mean, you realize if the pitch counts at a certain point, I mean, you may be out there on moment's notice.
Yeah, I mean, being in the bullpen coming up in the bullpen in the minor leagues really helps you, because you kind of got to be ready every day. And that's the mentality you have to have. You know, you set a routine, but sometimes that routine gets a lot of whack by, you know, maybe the starter's not having a good day. But you just turn it on, you flip the switch, and you get ready to go in and do your job.
And so, like, you go into, like, a 6 or 7 day road trip or homestand or something like that. How many times in your mind do you kind of anticipate you're going to be out there?
I anticipate every game, mm-hmm. You know, unless they tell me I'm not going to pitch, I'm going to be ready to pitch every day.
And so what do you do in that routine to try to get yourself ready for those opportunities?
It starts when I get to the ballpark. You know, I finish my coffee and then I get in the weight room, I roll out a little bit, I do some exercises in there, and then comes game time, you know, usually the 3rd or 4th inning, I'll stretch out a little bit. Because my job, I kind of know, like, I'm going to be the early guy, because we got some pretty good guys at the back end that can take care of that. So I get stretched out in the 3rd or 4th and mentally ready to go.
Well, I've got to ask you this: how did you come up with the nickname Black Bear?
Well, me and my buddy Josh Smoker, we both had big beards last year. His is brown, mine's black, so they just started calling us Black Bear and Brown Bear, because we're not the thinnest guys, so we're kind of bigger dudes, and so I don't know, it just stuck.
Who of the two of you, who had the better beard?
I did. His is a little patchy.
Okay. So. Yours is full. Yeah. It's in other words, it's a full black bear.
Yeah, it is. It is for sure.
That's great. I mean, how good did you feel just going, coming from the Mets, which of course, you know, they had got off to such a great start, to come to a team like the Mariners?
I was, when I got the news that the Mariners claimed me, I was excited, because it told me that they were going to give me an opportunity and they wanted me there. You know, they wanted me here with them, and that helps your confidence too.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks to leave the Mets, but because I know everybody there, but this is a great opportunity here and a great place to play.
Yeah, because that's the one thing. I mean, because you're pretty well traveled. Because I mean, you know, born in Vegas or grew up in Vegas, and then down in Central Florida. You know, then drafted by the Mets and all that stuff. So you've been kind of around the country.
Yeah, I have, and it's been one heck of a ride. It's got to see a lot of cool places throughout the minor leagues and even in college. And now even in the big leagues, I get to see more places, which I never thought I would see.
I mean, even though it hasn't been as long, as many home games as you would expect, I mean, what's your first feel about being around the Seattle area?
I love it. It's definitely different than what I'm used to in Vegas, but it has a little bit, reminds me a little bit of New York, downtown area. But then you go out and, you know, I go up on the rooftop at my apartment and I look over the Puget Sound. I mean, that's pretty darn cool, you know.
Then, of course, the great part is that, you know, coming from Vegas, you have a hockey team that has just stunned everybody as an expansion team that, you know, swept the first round of the series. And now they're playing so well that who knows how far they're going to go. You got to be a big hockey fan about that.
Oh man, that's amazing. I didn't used to watch hockey, but now I do, and it's their game last night was absolutely incredible. Just the start they got off to for the series it's a good one, and hopefully they can carry it through. And who knows how far they'll get, but hopefully it's pretty far. That'd be really exciting for them and also for the city.
Yeah, I'm growing up in Vegas. You probably never thought hockey was going to be on the agenda, did you?
No, not at all. I thought, you know, baseball or football would be there first, but hockey, I guess, I mean, the NHL picked a good place to come.
And, of course, by 2020, now the same rules are going to go for what's going to be a Seattle team. And that one, with, of course, has already got some great management and all that stuff. I mean, there's going to be hockey excitement here. Hey, great excitement right now. Chasen Bradford, congratulations on the move here, on the great start, and thanks for joining us in the Venue Kings Hotline.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Chasen Bradford's off to a good start. He's gone 9 2/3 innings. He's got 2 wins, and he really seems to embrace that role of being one of the first guys to come in, whether it's going to be the 5th inning or the 6th inning. I think it's a very difficult task, but again, that's where baseball's going right now. I mean, starters, they're, you know, knowing that you're going to go, you know, 92 to 100 pitches. If that happens by the 5th inning, all of a sudden, Chasen Bradford and others are coming out there. And I think, as we're talking about, you saw in that Astros series the importance of having somebody that can come in, and a couple people that can come in and do a good job in the 5th and 6th innings. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we're going to get the grade book out. Lots of things to grade. It's the John Clayton Show on 710.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the John Clayton Show, and you know what would be great is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, of course, we'll get to the report card in a second, but breaking news, Byron Maxwell has just signed a one-year contract, according to Adam Schefter. It could be worth up to $3 million, so you figure maybe it's about, oh, say $2 million, something like that, maybe $1.5 million. But he finally gets back, and of course, now that takes one thing off the checklist of what is needed, because now that gets him a cornerback. It gives him now some flexibility, because he saw Byron Maxwell coming out in the final 7 games of the season and really playing some good football, and so now all of a sudden the cornerback position is a little bit deeper. And so I thought that was an overdue move, because, you know, they were able to go ahead and, you know, you know, they have Shaquille Griffin, of course, who did such a great job, who's now the number one guy. You know, Byron Maxwell knows this system so well, and so we'll see. He'll compete, you know, as far as trying to start, but I would imagine now he then becomes the starter on the other side, and so now all of a sudden the depth is there, and they may or may not have to take a cornerback in this draft. So I do think, I mean, this was a huge move, and one that I was just kind of surprised it's taken so long. Now, again, they, because at this time, most of the guys that come back and end up getting deals, I mean, it's all minimum salary deals, and so he kind of put himself in a very vulnerable position, but he was able to come back and he was able to get the deal, so that's encouraging. Remember, you know, they've already gone out and signed Dante Johnson to a one-year $1.3 million deal. They have Justin Coleman in the slot. So now all of a sudden, what was a thin position has now become at least deep enough. I mean, all DeAndre Elliott is still there. You know, they have Nico Thorpe. And so getting Maxwell back, I think, is huge. So that deal got done. By the way, I know sad news in the National Football League. Jay Cutler's retiring again.
Oh, no.
I know. Isn't that terrible? you know, I think the one thing, because, you know, it's time to do the report card. We've got to grade Jay Cutler's retirement. A, the fact that he's out of the league. I think his return last year was probably a D because he was so bad with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one, Professor. I have never been a Jay Cutler fan. I lived in Denver when he was there, and people were actually really sad. They thought Josh McDaniels, well, I know you don't like McDaniels
Joshy
either.
Boy.
They thought he was the worst coach on the planet for getting rid of Cutler, and I think that might have been one of the best moves he made.
Well, I don't know if there's any good move that Joshy Boy made, but again, he got rid of him, and it was basically on a meeting. Because, you know, he and Jay Cutler got into it, and they just didn't seem to like each other. So because of the personality issue, they did dump him and trade, or not dump him, they got good value, but trading him to the Chicago Bears. All right, it's time for the report card.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And the report card is what we do every day, and we try to at least grade some of the crazy, wacky, silly, good, bad, indifferent stuff that's out there. And of course, with the draft yesterday, I'm sure there's stuff from that, along with what's going on, baseball, hockey, basketball, you name it. So let's start with the report card.
All right, Professor, first up, I saw this post-draft interview with Saquon Barkley. That was pretty funny. He was talking about things he might do with his money, and apparently his dad has a tattoo that might need some work done on it now that he's been drafted to the Giants.
Here with Saquon Barkley, number 2 overall pick. He's headed to the Giants, and I know you've answered a lot of real questions, but I want to know what your first purchase is going to be with the big check.
Yeah, definitely go put something down in savings and try a vest, but got to get my mom a crib, you know?
Mom's crib
mom's
first?
Crib. Mom and dad's crib. My dad actually has been a little butthurt. He's like, you always say your mom's crib, and I'm like, all right, I'll start saying my mom and dad's crib.
Even though dad has the tat of the Giants, he still gets to stay in the crib?
No, he got a tat of the Jets.
The Jets?
So, you know, hopefully we can find a way. Maybe that might be another purchase.
That's it. Second purchase, fix dad's tattoo, get the Giants on the forearm.
Now, that's taking care of business. I mean, that's taking care of business. A new crib for the mom and the dad, and all of a sudden, he's got to get that changed, that tattoo, the Jets tattoo. So I have to give him an A because, I mean, you know, he's got a kind of a good plan. It's almost like, you know, I mean, he's got that vision that he's running the football. So you give him the football, it's like, okay, so what are you going to do with your money? Okay, I got savings first, going to get a crib for mom and dad, and we got to get that Jet thing off that my dad's tattoo. That's got to change to the Giants. A.
I wonder how many Jets tattoos have been changed. It seems like there might be more than just that one.
Yeah, I mean, does Jessamine have a Jets tattoo?
I don't believe so.
Nah, okay.
But she is a super fan.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And by the way, you should have saw how elated she was when all of a sudden Sam Darnold ends up going to the Jets. It was almost like she was jumping up and down, but she was so happy about that draft last night. I mean, you know, because I don't know if she was going to be as excited about Baker Mayfield, but Sam Darnold, she was excited.
Yeah, I really think that I thought they gave up a lot to move up to that pick in the trade with the Colts, but I don't think it could have worked out much better for them. Everybody seems to think that him getting to mentor with Josh McCown is going to be a really great situation. And they had a really, I mean, they have Jermaine Kearse there. Robbie Anderson was great last year. They have some good young receivers.
Mm-hmm. No, so no, I think that was a good move. And you know, sometimes you get lucky. Again, I still think the Browns made a mistake, but hey, I've never talked Browns mistakes before.
Never.
Never.
All right. Next up, I have Jair Alexander, the cornerback drafted by the Packers at 18. This is another interview after he was drafted, but he hears in the background that his teammate Lamar Jackson was getting picked by the Ravens, and his reaction was pretty priceless.
More! What? Sorry, Lamar. It's surreal. It's great. My boy Lamar. What? What pick?
He went to the Ravens last pick of the round.
Supporting his teammate.
If you could see the video too, he was jumping up and down, literally.
Really?
He just stopped everything he was doing with the interview he was in.
Wow. I guess that's the fun of trades and stuff like that, because first, you know, he gets involved in the trade with Seattle that allows him to go to the Green Bay Packers, and now he sees a trade that nobody expected at the bottom of the round like that. Again, you know, I thought going in that Jackson was going to be a trade up from some team in the second, and now it turned out to be Baltimore doing it at 32. But that's the fun part of the draft, because I know I've seen that happen a couple times when I'm on the air back at the draft, where all of a sudden a teammate goes and the guy gets excited. But I have to give him probably a B+ for his overzealousness, because again, he was so happy, and again, you know, he's a first round pick and now Lamar Jackson's a first round pick. They have a lot of good memories to share about last night.
All right, last up, Professor, we talked about this yesterday. Remember how some people thought it might have been a strategy by Roger Goodell to bring up Roger Staubach and Jason Witten and Troy Aikman with him so he wouldn't get booed?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work.
Didn't work, no.
Here we are. I like how he kind of confirmed that what we all thought was, you guys are booing the Cowboys.
So, no doubt. I mean, he got with PR to see, okay, what way can we defer and try to bring down some of the boos? And so I guess you have to say Roger's strategy gets an F, because it just failed. Because, this is the town that lost Ezekiel Elliott for 6 games. This is the town that had Jerry Jones lose $2 million because he tried to get involved with a lawsuit to try to help out Ezekiel Elliott. And, of course, the Cowboys didn't make the playoffs, and you know that they're blaming so much of it on Roger Goodell. So interesting to see the reaction, interesting to see that he had a strategy to try to fix things up, and also interesting to see that it just didn't work. I mean, he got booed, and I would imagine now that he's turned it over, because he would have other people, I think probably Troy Vincent handling the rest, that he can go hide and not have to worry about it. But yeah, it's funny, because I mean, every draft he gets booed, and it seems to get worse every year.
Well, I feel like every year there's some other fan base that he kind of upsets more than others, like the Cowboys and the Patriots.
Oh yeah, no question about it. I mean, can you imagine how loud it gets on the boos at New England? I mean, because it's even worse there. So it's like, I don't know. Maybe the next strategy is to take into account, okay, what cities can be my boo enemy and not have the draft go there? I mean, that might be one of the strategies you can have. So in other words, I think it's safe to say that he's not going to hold the draft in Foxborough.
No,
it's safe
never.
To say that.
He doesn't even like to go to games there anymore.
No. He has to kind of be low-keyed as he goes to games like that. And I wonder what other cities might pop up. I guess you have to kind of look at the suspensions to be able to see that. But yeah, New England and Dallas are the two, I think, probably are the worst places for Roger Goodell to be and not be able to go. But it's like, yeah, you bring the strategy of getting the most popular Cowboys in history, and it's still got the boos. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. And don't forget, the Mariners face Cleveland this afternoon at 4. Pre-game coverage begins at 3 here on 710 ESPN Seattle. All right, coming up next, we will take your text questions at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, draft is 1 day old, going into rounds 2 and 3 tonight. And, of course, we'll be on the air all day tomorrow. Of course, we'll be on the draft lounge. And, of course, Mariner Baseball will also be there. But, of course, we are timed right now to take your text questions. So text us at 710-710. Maura, what do we have?
First up, the 509 says, Professor, do you think CBS Sports giving Seattle a D grade for drafting Rashad Penny is too harsh?
Probably, yeah. Because, you know, again, he seems to be the back that fits what they wanted the most. And you saw that what this team has done is that, you know, from last year's draft and some changes, they decided to try to, you know, take the board and make it a little bit thinner. And so you can see that what they liked about him was that he is kind of a young back that hasn't been used up a lot in college. You know, he did have 2,253 yards last year, but, you know, he's a versatile enough to be a pass catching back, and they just liked him more. So it's almost like the bad grade they gave to Bruce Irvin. Again, it's like, you know, where the trust has to be is the success that this team has had drafting. And, you know, I would give it a better grade than D. That's for sure. That was harsh.
425 says, after hearing the interview with Coach Long, would it be a reach to say the Patriots could have been the team to inquire about a trade?
It was funny, Maura and I were talking about that on the off the air, and that's exactly what we thought. Because, you know, you saw that they came back and took Sony Michael, or Michelle, right after that. And I kind of get the idea it may have been New England. It just called up and says, hey, would you give us, would we work something out that we can get this trade and get this done? And so, no, I think it might very well maybe New England.
They have early picks to spare.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously it would just be like a seventh-round pick or something like that. But, you know, I would have to think it's got to be New England, because you notice the question I asked, would it be Detroit or New England that showed the interest in him? And he kind of confirmed those two teams showed him a lot of interest. And so, yeah, I think New England might have been that team.
All right, someone that said they missed most of the morning show, the 360, wants to know what you think of the Rashad Penny pick versus maybe positions of need that they had.
Well, I mean, I think it, you know, goes to the emphasis of the team. And, you know, what I'd like to find out is what they think of Harold Landry, the defensive end from Boston College, because, you know, obviously they're all seemingly in agreement that he wasn't a first round pick. Because he slipped now into the second round. I thought he would be a temptation at 18 in a year where there's not a lot of good pass rushers, and he was going to be among the top three or four pass rushers. I thought that might have been one of the options. But again, I think what happens is that you know, you take what you think is going to help the team the most. I think what they feel right now is that you know, they can go ahead, and if they can run the football, it's going to help them immensely, because I think that they felt, okay, we have a choice here. Do we take the pass rusher, which of course is a big need, or can we find one later on? Do we find somebody in free agency, or do you take the running back? They felt the running back, but again, I thought maybe it would be more the defensive end, but, you know, like anything else, you take the best player available for what you want, and what they wanted was a running back that fits all those criteria and have the versatility, as opposed to maybe just that pass rusher.
Well, and the one thing you really have to like about him after the year that the Seahawks went through with injuries with the running backs is that he's durable.
Yes. And he hasn't been used up a lot in college.
Yeah. The 602 wants to know what you think it will take for Seattle to move up tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a lot. I mean, you know, if they want to move, well, of course, I mean, obviously the big one would be Earl Thomas, because, you know, there's still, and of course, it's interesting because as this day goes on, I mean, you keep hearing more and more. All of a sudden, you know, two teams seem to be interested, and that second team might be the Cleveland Browns, but I'd have to think that now, you really can't do things if you're Dallas. You can't give up that second round pick and take Earl Thomas. All of a sudden, your needs have shifted dramatically on offense. And again, this just happened today. You know Dez Bryant was released a couple weeks ago on a Friday, but Jason Witten retired to go to ESPN. So now you're down a tight end and a wide receiver. I mean, you don't have the luxury after taking a linebacker in the first round to not do something on offense, whether it's a wide receiver or tight end. So I think you have to almost throw away the Dallas Cowboys. And so the trade-ups, I'd have to think, you know, you're talking about, you know, using a whole bunch of those four fifth-round picks to see what you can add to it, you know, and move up in the third round. I don't think they can get into the second round unless they trade Earl Thomas. And right now, I think that's pretty remote.
All right. 206 says, John, wanted to let you know I nominated you for the Steelers Hall of Honor. Appreciate you keeping the Steeler Nation up to date here in the Northwest.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Didn't know that they had one, and it's nice to be nominated. Thank you. I appreciate it.
On that note, the 253 wants to know, do you think the Steelers will take Mason Rudolph?
I don't. I think he's going to probably go to a team like New England. You know, again, I don't know if they're necessarily trying to replace Ben Roethlisberger or find a replacement. I know that Kevin Colbert said that that's certainly something that they're looking at. But I tend to think that, no, I think they're not going to take Mason Rudolph.
509 asks, Professor, how many hours go into research for a draft?
You mean with me or with teams?
Looks like they clarified, actually, for a draft pick. So
oh, for
probably
a draft
for teams.
Pick? Oh, it's endless. I mean, what are we talking about, 1,000 hours or so? I mean, because, again, what you're looking at is that, you know, first you go to the scouting combine meeting. I mean, you know, the scout, you know, whether it's Bledsoe or National, you get to work on that. And so you study the player there. Then, of course, you got all your trips that are scheduled to go to the school to see the player. Then you see if he's going to be at the Senior Bowl. You spend time with him at the combine. You probably have him come in for a visit to the facility. And then you then have pretty much round the clock meetings to be able to talk about it. I'd have to say it's 1,000 hours a player.
All right, we have a question from the 509, the group that calls you JC Penny. Now we can combine JC and Rashad Penny to make JC Penny.
There you go.
They said, does Denver have the scariest defensive front in football now that they drafted Chubb?
I don't know if I buy that. I mean, I think that getting Chubb was a great choice, but you know, they've been so depleted with some of the losses they've had. I mean, losing Sylvester Williams. I mean, they let him go. They let Malik Jackson go. So I wouldn't say they're the scariest at all. I mean, there's no doubt the scariest is the Rams.
The 253 wants to know, do you think the Seahawks have a chance to draft Hercules Mata'afa in the third round?
Yeah, they do. No question. I mean, that could be a possibility. And, you know, Shaquille Griffin's brother could be a possibility. You know, outside linebacker. We'll see if there's anything left on the defensive end slot. But you'd have to think that's going to be a defensive pick. But, yeah, that could be a – because, again, he's so fast.
Along that line, 360 wants to know, what pass rushers could the Seahawks target today?
Well, again, it's going to be a little difficult to be able to do that, but you know, because again, third round pick, and again, they got 76. So if you're looking in the third round, you know what you're probably looking at is maybe Breland Spears, maybe Duke Elisafor. I mean, some of the guys like that. I mean, Jalen Holmes could be a possibility. I mean, those defensive ends can be possible guys in the third round.
509 wants to know, JC, what was the biggest steal in the draft? They say they're leaning towards Rosen to the Cardinals or Darnold to the Jets.
Darnold to the Jets, no question about it. Because, again, I think he was the first pick in the draft. And then be able to trade up 3 second-round picks and get the first pick like that I think was huge. Because I think he's got the strong arm. I think he's going to do well in New York. I think that was the biggest steal.
253 wants to know the possibility of using some fours to move into a second-round pick.
Well, they only have 1-4, so that's going to be very difficult. So, no, I just think it's going to be very difficult. I mean, the only way they can get maybe a second-round pick is either trade Earl Thomas or trade a number one pick next year.
We're getting some texts from, I think, people that missed that we did cover the Byron Maxwell extension.
Yeah.
But I was asking you, does that affect – so it's a one-year, $3 million deal, well, according to Adam
remember,
Schefter.
That's incentives to take it up to $3
million. Worth $3
million,
so, yeah.
Like, for example, I mean, you know half – half of the he'll have a roster bonus in there, and half of that roster bonus won't count because he didn't play. You know, it's a per game roster bonus, and so what, he only played like about 7 games. So let's say, for example, they make it $1 million for playing. Now he can make up that million. So I think it's probably a 1-year deal with two that has, you know, a roster bonus and stuff like that, and other incentives.
And John, you were telling me you think that if there was a shot, which maybe there wasn't, at Earl getting an extension, this definitely lessens it?
Yeah, because, again, it eats up more cap room. Because even, you know, if they do have the roster bonus per game and only half of it's going to count, you still have to account for it. And because, again, you know, you have to pay it by the end of the year, and that'll count against the cap. So, you know, that's why, and again, we don't know other incentives and things like that. But, you know, they were like at about $7.3 million. This will take them down to probably, you know, $5.3 million. And, again, they'll get money back from Cliff Avril. I just think it's going to be very difficult. I mean, clearly, if they do an extension on Earl, you know, he can take his cap number down. But I just don't envision right now a deal for Earl.
All right, the 541 wants to know, John, how would you handle it if everyone booed you as much as they boo Roger Goodell?
I wouldn't like it. I mean, you know, you want to, it's like, it's, I've been fortunate that I really haven't been booed too much in my life, and that's good. But, yeah, I wouldn't like it at all because, again, you want to be, you know, the positive person as far as, you know, hearing the response of the people. Not the, you want to be the friend, not the enemy.
The 206 wants to know if there's any chance the Seahawks could trade a Fetty and Procise.
Yeah, I mean, maybe is, I think it's going to be tougher on Ifedi because, you know, you have to really give a discount on that because, I mean, you're taking a, you know, a bigger guarantee in the contract. I mean, ProSize probably can go for like a sixth round pick or something like that. That could be something that can happen in training camp.
All right, last one, Professor. What the 509 wants to know your thoughts on the Martavis Bryant trade.
I thought it was interesting because, you know, a third-round pick is pretty pricey. And so I thought the Steelers got a good end of that, getting that third-round pick. And, you know, it was nice for the Raiders because it was kind of like a free third-round pick because they were able to get that from moving back from 10 to 15 and taking the offensive lineman that they liked. So, yeah, it was kind of like a little bit easy. But, again, what you wonder about is that, you know, can Bryant stay clean and do a good job? And he's got great speed, and you can imagine that John Gruden's got to be excited about that because, you know, that big playability can really help. You know that Seth Roberts, one of their third wide receivers, they're already shopping around, so he's probably going to get cut or traded. But, no, I think it was a good acquisition, but also I think Steelers got good value for a three.
All right, that's it for text today, Professor.
Okay, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, we talk to Dave Gross.
Thanks to the Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us now is Dave Grosby, and I know that while you're watching some hockey and basketball and baseball, you had a chance to peek over and see what the Seahawks did, and of course, like everybody, nobody figured it out in this town that it was going to be Rashard Penny, the running back. How stunned were you when you heard that name?
Stunned. Not stunned that it was a running back, necessarily. Yeah. Stunned, number one, they took the pick.
Right.
I mean, it's been forever since they've picked in the first round. And then was a name that hadn't popped up. So it was a surprise. I don't know that I'd call it a reach. You know, there some projected him in the second round, some projected him in the third round, and then you're near the bottom of the first round. That's all a mishmash anyway. But hopefully he solves their problem, their little problem of running the football. It struck me that this is you're gonna invest first round capital on a running back. You're bringing him in to be the starter. So I understand that there'll be competition and they'll be rooting for Chris Carson and Mike Davis and all this and that, but. It will be the first conclusion was, well, it'll be a disappointment if this guy's not your starting running back. Would you agree?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think what it comes down to is that, I mean, ultimately he'll be the starting running back, but I think that you can go into it, you know, with Chris Carson being the starter and then try to work him in, kind of like he was in his, you know, junior and sophomore year where, you know, he was slowly working in because, you know, he's still very, you know, a young back that is still learning on the fly here, but he's very talented. We talked to his coach at San Diego State, and he was just talking about how explosive he is, and, you know, ultimately, I think it could be one of those things where you start out with Carson, and then as the season goes on, he just takes over. And you see that in so many different places. I mean, that was what was happening with Dalvin Cook with the Minnesota Vikings. They started with Latavius Murray, and then eventually, you know, they got over to Dalvin Cook before he blew out his knee. So I think it's going to be a transitional type of things, but ultimately, he'll be the back.
Well, I think it'd be unfortunate if it's a transitional type of thing because the guys you're talking about were guys that were relatively productive and Chris Carson, you know, in fairness, he was injured, so he didn't really have a chance to show how productive he could be, but he wasn't productive. Their running game wasn't productive. So you're not talking about a running game that already has some bullets in the chamber, so to speak. So I'll be disappointed if he's not the starter at the start of the year.
Yeah, but I'm not because again I think that it's sometimes it's a slow process to get a back ready. I think that you know he's going to be a big part of the offense because again, you know, there's going to be times I think where they're going to put both guys in the backfield because, you know, Carson has pass catching ability too, and you know, I know that they had a pretty good grade on him last year, probably a fourth round grade, even though they got lucky and got him in the seventh round with that trade down on the Malik McDowell situation. But you know, no, I think because again, a lot of times, and you see it in so many places. I mean, you take the back and you just give him time to be able to do it. So if he's not a starter by week one, I clearly don't think it's a disappointment. I mean, if he's not a starter by the end of the year, middle of the year, or by next year, then it would be a disappointment.
All right, well, we'll disagree on that.
Yeah, that's okay. But that's charting and tracking some of the way that backs get their jobs. It's good that somebody, like, obviously, you know, that Barkley's going to be the back to start out. But in this case, I think it's still going to be a transition. But it was interesting, though, to see that, you know, hardly anybody had him, like Mike Mayock and Mel Kiper and all those in that top five for the running backs. But, you know, this was, in other people's minds, maybe one of the better running backs.
Well, I mean, everyone's got an opinion at this time of the year, and we've documented the fact that no one's ever right in terms of of predicting who's going to take whom. Like always, it'll just wait and see. I mean, I haven't watched him play. I don't know how much it matters that he played in the Mountain West or not against that kind of competition. We'll all wait and see when he gets here.
Mm-hmm. But at least, they got a running back. And then, of course, the other news today is that Byron Maxwell signed a deal, a one-year contract, probably around $1.5 to $2 million that can be up to $3 million with incentives. And so now that takes, one thing off the plate as far as, the urgency to try to draft a cornerback.
I wonder if they had that. They obviously knew that was going to happen before the draft. It seems to me.
You would think so.
They would have probably gone, they could have possibly gone in a different direction if they didn't think they were going to get Maxwell, who I'm sure they're projecting as a starting cornerback.
Mm-hmm. I would think, yeah. And now all of a sudden they have a reasonable depth at the cornerback position because you got Shaquille Griffin, you have Byron Maxwell, who did a good job coming back and starting. You were able to get Dante Johnson for $1.3 million. I mean, he's going to be an option. And you have, Justin Coleman at the slot, and then you still have two other options there in Nico Thorpe and DeAndre Elliott. So all of a sudden, that urgency to take a cornerback is out.
Definitely, which is good news for them. So we'll see what they do the rest of the way. If they move up, if Earl Thomas is going to be traded, what are your 50-50 odds telling you on that?
I think I'm down to about maybe still 10% because your Cowboys are out right now. There's no way they can do it. And the reason I say that is that they got they made the move and cut Dez Bryant, so they still need a receiver. They took a linebacker to start out. Okay, that's fine. But then today they find out that Jason Witten is retiring to go to ESPN. So now they need a receiver and a tight end. And so I just can't imagine that they're going to have the luxury to trade a second-round pick and get a free safety. They can't do it.
Well, don't you think they knew about Witten?
No.
Oh, you think that caught him by surprise?
Yeah, I think it did. I really think it did. Because, he'd been back and forth and all that stuff. And then, they knew that there was interest. It's kind of like Greg Olsen, the tight end for the Carolina Panthers. I mean, he was kind of saying, if I can't get a new deal, I might go into television. And he's going to go into television because he seems to get pretty good reviews. But in the end, he just signed a 2-year extension. And so now he stays, but Jason Witten goes. So, now they have to find a way to get another tight end.
So the Cowboys are out, and that's pretty much does it.
There's some people that think that Cleveland might be involved, with John Dorsey. I mean, how much he values safeties. I mean, he, he had Eric Berry, and the value of Eric Berry with the, with what he was able to add for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, that's an outside chance, but I just don't see it happening right now.
Okay.
But now it's a matter that they got a third-round pick, and they got, I think, to find some kind of pass rush to be able to help them out now that they didn't
take a pass.
You
think they'll try and move up into the second round?
I don't think they have a chance. I don't think they have enough ammunition because what do they have to offer? I mean, the only thing I can think that can get them into the second round, unless it's an Earl Thomas trade, would be trading next year's number one.
Well, I wouldn't want to do that.
I would not want to do that. How about your New Orleans Saints doing that to trade up to get Marcus Davenport?
Surprising, huh? Was that your biggest surprise?
No, the biggest surprise still was, Sam Darnold falling to number 3. That was my biggest surprise. That I did not anticipate. I was also surprised that Harold Landry, the defensive end out of Boston College, fell out of the first round because I thought he was going to go to either, if Seahawks would have maybe taken him at 18 or on a trade down, or that Detroit would take him at the 20th pick.
You know what my biggest surprise was, John?
What's that?
I didn't have one.
You didn't have one?
No.
No. How much time did you spend watching the draft?
I watched the 10 minutes leading up to it. I watched the first pick and then basically just switched back and forth from the baseball game.
Mm-hmm. So now...
I happen to catch... it's just guys making picks.
Yeah.
So it's not vital to watch the picks actually being made, in my opinion. I did happen to see Ryan Shazier walk up, which was kind of a magic moment. And I thought Roger Goodell looked like a clown walking up there with the Cowboys getting booed.
I know. How about the fact that... he even confirmed that he had that strategy to have the Cowboys protect him, and it didn't work. It's like, hey, you're booing their Cowboys. It's like, how about even admitting that?
Well, everyone knew who they were booing for crying out loud.
I know.
And he's gonna dodge it in Dallas of all places.
Yeah, after taking Ezekiel Elliott out for 6 games and taking $2 million away from Jerry Jones on the lawsuit.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that wasn't gonna go over. I just wonder if Jerry booed. Or listening to the boos, how much he smiled.
I bet he smiled.
Had to.
I bet he smiled.
No question about that. So now, are you looking forward to tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Sitting in a marathon draft day?
John, I'm looking forward to peppering you with question after question tomorrow.
Okay, well, that'll be good. Yeah. But again, that's going to be
some of them will even be about the draft.
Yeah, but that's going to be you watching four rounds of draft.
Well, sorta.
Sorta.
Yeah. I'll be watching, but I'll be busy analyzing the picks with my trusty draft guide.
Oh, okay.
And then demanding answers from you as to why they were taken when they were taken.
Okay, well, that'll be good.
No, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be.
I may be running just a little bit late, though, tomorrow.
Oh, that's okay. What time are you going to get there?
Probably about 9:30.
Oh, that's fine. No, yeah. That's good. We start at 9. It's kind of a loose type of thing.
No, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? It'll be fun.
Hey, so what do we have on Bob
Grouse? That's when all the action happens.
Absolutely. What do we have on Bob Grouse and Tom today?
We're talking to Ben Gamble at 1 o'clock, Mike Blowers shortly after that, and this Clayton guy is going to talk to us about the draft. You familiar with him?
Never heard of him.
He really is good at analyzing draft stuff.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, I'll be talking to you at 2 and seeing you all day tomorrow. And, of course, we will be back tomorrow. It's not going to be the John Clayton Show, but we got a draft that's going to be going on from 9 o'clock all the way through the day. And, of course, we'll also have the draft lounge, everything going good. So it's the John Clayton Show. See you Monday, and also see you on tomorrow. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.